you look at the competition at lock, and then you think of the fact that Ryan Baird had a concussion, then you think of guys like Tom O'Hearn coming through the system, he probably needed to come on and be really explosive and dynamic.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Settle in on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 0.0.
You're welcome along to another edition of Settle In, and Settle In is brought to you by Guinness 0.0. This week, I'm delighted to welcome an Irish Olympian, a four-time world cross-country silver medalist, a European cross-country champion, the winner of a London, Berlin and Amsterdam marathon, and the current still Irish marathon record holder, Caithríona McKiernan. How are you doing? Thanks for coming in.
Very good, Owen. Thank you very much. And maybe even before we start, I might just correct you on that last little thing that you said there, because Sinead Diver, actually, she lives in Australia now and has for a good number of years, but she's an Irish girl and she has ran faster than me in the marathon, so I feel a little bit uncomfortable when people say that I'm the fastest Irish marathon record, that I hold the Irish record.
Right.
In my eyes, I don't. And that's okay.
That's interesting, because obviously she represents Australia. So you're relinquishing that title and giving it to
personally, Sinead. I am. Yes. Yeah. And she knows that, because when she ran faster, I sent her a message and congratulated her. And to be honest, yeah, it was just because I didn't even know it was in Valencia that she ran it a couple of years ago, and I didn't know that she was running. And I was a little bit, I will be honest, a little bit sad for a half an hour or so, and then I just forgot about it. And because, you know, when you do hold on to a title like that for a number of years, you think that nobody's ever going to break it, and you think that it belongs to you, but that's foolish. And I'm okay with it for sure after that half hour. And you know, it's fantastic time Sinead ran, and I was a lot younger when I ran 2:22, and Sinead ran 2:21 something. So it's phenomenal how fast people are running marathons now. And also, one thing that I find a little bit difficult to understand is how they recover so quickly after marathon and maybe able to go out a couple of months again and do another marathon. Things have definitely changed.
For sure. 26 years wasn't a bad innings for that record to stand.
Yeah, it was a 26 years own. Yeah, yeah, it was. That's a good long time. And I forget what it was like now at that stage, at that time. But it's a good innings, all right.
We are both delighted to be in here in studio rather than outside today. It is an absolute dog of a day, to use the technical phrase out there. Real cross-country conditions out there today. I'm sure plenty of times when you see the wind and the rain, you're like, right, cross-country season is here.
Yeah, and plenty of traffic out there, Owen, as well. It's not moving. I should have abandoned the car about a mile earlier than I did. I did end up abandoning it, but I should have abandoned it even earlier. But I suppose I started off with cross-country, and growing up on the farm at home, that was something that I was very used to and something that was very natural for me. And I had good success in the cross country and brought people lots of joy and enjoyed that. And then obviously they went on to run on the track and then on the road. So that's the way the career, that's how it developed and evolved.
You've spoken about the farm before and that being your arena when you were growing up, whether it was a young camogie player or obviously as a young runner. Can you talk us through a little bit more about that, the environment in which you grew up?
Yeah, so I'm the youngest of seven, three boys. I have three brothers and three sisters. And I often make the joke that I used to go running around the fields on the family farm just to get away from them all. But I really don't know why. From a very, very young age, I did go running around the fields. Just, to be honest, for the feeling of confidence that it gave me, feeling of well-being, even at that very young age. And I didn't have any inclination or want to compete in any races. I just ran because I loved the feeling of the ground underneath me. And then it wasn't until my last year at secondary school, there was an athletic club set up, and I joined that. I wasn't very fond of school, I hated the idea of sitting all day, but I joined the athletic club, and I won the All-Ireland Schools Cross Country from that, and it was really then that my career took off. But previous to that, I would have been very active. I played a lot of camogie and cycled a lot and swam in the lakes at home in Cavan. So I would have been very, very active and built up a good aerobic fitness from a very young age.
That piece of finding confidence in cross country when you were a youngster, does achieving things as a young person give you a sense of validation in your identity when you're in, when you win that national cross country title, for example?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I think, I suppose, being the youngest of seven, I had to fight my corner, and now I was getting a little bit of attention from people. And yeah, that was nice. But you have to be very careful with that as well, because you can begin to depend on that, and you're not going to have, every day that you go out and compete in a race, it's not always going to turn out that way you want it. So, you know, I suppose as you get a little bit older, you have to learn to be happy in your own skin regardless, and not be seeking attention from outside, and knowing that, you know, that you're at peace with it yourself regardless of the outcome.
That's a really interesting point. When do you realise that in your career, that the external factors can't really be something that you depend on for motivation?
I suppose it wasn't until after my career,
right.
Really, yes. I suppose my career took a funny turn in ways. Like, I was very heavily involved for a good 10 years and thought of nothing else, only running, and it was just training and racing and running and travelling around the world. And then I did get tired of that, to be honest. And then I got married and had Dervla initially first, and then Patrick came along a few years later, and I just took a back seat from running completely. I didn't have much interest in running, and I just enjoyed rearing them, and every day was different with them, and I enjoyed motherhood. And I suppose then when they got a little bit older and were a little bit more independent, then I felt the loss of running. But it wasn't right. Until then. Often people feel it immediately after they stop competing, but I suppose I had the distraction of the children, and it was a new life, and I enjoyed that. But then there came a stage, yes, where I missed the running, and I went back just, you know, just running races around, mainly in the Phoenix Park and different places like that. And again, that lasted for 2 or 3 years, or maybe a little bit longer. And but you know that it can't last forever. And I did enjoy that. And I, you know, once you have that competitive streak in you, it's always there. Regardless, and now I just run for sanity. I run a half hour, maybe 4 or 5 days a week, just for myself. And again, I kind of done the complete circle. I just run again for that feeling of satisfaction and fitness and well-being that it gives me.
Full circle, right back to the farm in Cavan.
Yeah.
When you are in that state in your childhood, and you are weighing up all the different opportunities that are available to you as a sports person, did you realise the possibilities that were there for you within athletics? Like, was there role models out there that you could look to and say, I want to be that person? Because I'm sure there are plenty of people in recent years who would look to yourself and Sonia, and then there's a new generation of athletes now who people will get inspired by as well. What was your motivation in terms of those external factors and those people who you could try and emulate?
Yeah, it was very, very different because we didn't have social media, so we didn't really know about these other athletes. It was really just maybe World Championships or Olympics, you'd see them on TV. But to be honest, Owen, I didn't have any idea or what was going to be ahead of me. It all was very, very gradual in to a certain extent. When I won the All-Ireland Schools, I got a coach. Joe Doonan was my coach, and he remained my coach for my entire career. And I just started to train properly and, you know, kept a very low profile, went and ran different races, and was lucky enough to be on the podium for most of them, even, you know, when I went abroad and that. And then I suppose the next major breakthrough was the World Cross Country in Boston in 1992. And then, you know, I went on to win 3 more silver medals, never the gold, but it still brought a lot of joy to people. And I suppose that was a big driving force for me. It was more what I was able to give to people and the joy. And growing up in a very rural part of the country, seeing the excitement after I would come back from World Championships and having celebration and seeing how happy everybody was, that's what got me out the door on wet, windy, cold days, to be able to continue to improve and bring them joy. And I'm not sure was that healthy, but it was my driving force. I remember coming near the end of my career, I said to Joe, my coach, I said, I'm doing this for other people, and hoping that he would elaborate a little bit, or he would help me to understand it. But all he said to me was, "You're joking me." So he didn't make me any the wiser of how I felt, but certainly it was for other people, and that dried up.
When he said, "You're joking me," he just didn't understand how that could be possible. Is that it? Or
yes, yeah. And he probably thought that he knew me very well, but he didn't realise that if really they were my driving force. They were the people, you know, during a race when I was very, very tired. They were the people that came into my mind, the people at home, my family, all the supporters around the country. That's what kept me just going and helped me block out the sheer exhaustion and discomfort that I was feeling in my body.
Was there ever a stage in your career where that actually did have a massive payoff for you, where the people back home, the general public, their sense of jubilation or them being impressed by your achievements, that you actually got something out of that you're like, wow, this does feel really good? When you say, "I'm doing this for other people," that actually for a period of time there was something addictive about that. The response of those other people was a good feeling at times?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, of course, when I went back to Cornafin and hundreds and thousands of people celebrating in the local pub, it was lovely. And seeing my parents and my siblings all happy, of course, that's, as I said, that was my driving force. That's what got me out the door in the morning times.
How do you manage to change your motivation then from other people to doing it for yourself?
I don't think I ever did, Owen. When I lost that hunger to do it for other people.
Your hunger went full stop.
I lost the drive, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating case study that if you could go back to your younger self now and actually rewire that view, would you do that? Or would you think to yourself, actually, no, this is the only way I could get the very best out of myself?
I don't think it was healthy, Owen.
Right.
The way I was operating. And there's a lot of things I would do differently, for sure. And maybe it's great now that athletes and sports people in general have psychologists and people to talk to. And I wish, that's why I said it to Joe back then. I said, "I'm doing this for other people." And why I said it to him was in the hope that he would kind of put a spotlight or explain to me and maybe take that weight off my shoulders, whereby I could continue to do it, but do it for myself.
It's fascinating because today, as you rightly say, there seems to be a lot more science when it comes to the mind, and there's a few more people maybe potentially available to athletes of your level and nowadays who can actually use all the resources around them. But on the flip side, there is also doing it for other people available on a smartphone and seeing the feedback, the jubilation, the joy that other people will get out of them. It's hard to know if it's a more difficult thing today or an easier thing today to actually try and figure out how to do it for you.
Yeah, I think if I was competing now, I would definitely have to talk to somebody because there's tremendous pressure on the athletes and they have to do it to a certain extent for sponsorship. I was lucky and Sonia was lucky that we just had the print media. We didn't have all of the social media. And I often tell the story, Owen, like before a big race, the telephone would ring on a Thursday evening and it would be Tom O'Riordan, God rest him, from the Irish Independent or some of the other papers, Peter Byrne from the Irish Times, looking for a quote. And my mother would answer the phone and I would say, I'm not here, like trying. And she'd speak to them, you know, very politely for a couple of minutes. And then she'd say, "She's here, I'll get her for you now." So there would be a big, and even at one stage, you know, when it got, when I got really good and winning a lot of races, we had to get an answering machine in the house.
Right. Because,
and she didn't like that at all. But yeah, and I do feel, I feel deeply for the athletes, because it shouldn't be like that. We shouldn't be putting so much pressure on ourselves. And I wish that I hadn't put so much pressure on myself. And I'd love to see them going out and enjoying it without that weight on their shoulders. But a certain amount of it is the nature of the beast as well. And I think particularly when you're in an individual sport like that, that there is that pressure because you don't have anybody to throw the ball to. And you're on your own when you put your foot on the start line. And it's easy to say to people, and I keep saying it to people now, just enjoy the journey of it. I'm not sure, does that get across to them very much or is of any help really? But why I feel so deeply about that is because I do want them to enjoy the journey and not put pressure on themselves, because I know that they will perform much, much better if they don't put pressure on themselves.
There's also the responsibility that comes from being in a sport that we could classify as something of a minority sport, where, first of all, as you point out, is the individual aspect of all of this, but secondary to that is the fact that sometimes you're bestowed with this responsibility to promote your sport. You know, if the popularity of cross-country in this country, someone could say is directly attached to you and what you say about the sport, and you have to be an ambassador for the sport. Same with plenty of other people in who have gone after you. Like, even if you look at someone like Fionnuala McCormack, I mean, if she doesn't pick up the phone to a journalist about cross country, she's not doing her job in terms of being an ambassador for the sport. That's just kind of an almost tongue-in-cheek kind of way of how some people might look at it. Did you ever feel that pressure as I say, quote-unquote, a minority sport participant, feeling the pressure to be an ambassador for that sport?
I wouldn't use the word ambassador as such. I just felt the pressure to deliver the goods. Once you win a race, So once you win a silver medal, for instance, from my point of view, once you win a silver medal in the World Cross Country Championships, the next year you go out, of course the pressure is going to be on you to do the same again or even better. So it's not that I felt that I needed to be an ambassador. I just felt that I needed to perform. And you know, it's a silly thing, really, that you feel worthless if you don't, and that's not the case. And I suppose I wish I had all of this knowledge that I had back then. And everybody says that, but you know, even though you don't achieve or get on the podium, you're still the same person. I'm still the same Katrina. I'm still, you know, whatever way people look at me, it's not about medals. And you know, sport is great, but it's the pressure that the athletes or that the sports people in general put on themselves, and as I said, think that they're not worthy or think that they're not good if they don't perform well. Like, you know, because you're hyped up,
yes.
And then, you know, if you don't, for instance, get out of your heats in the Olympic Games, or if you don't get into the semi-final, you feel very down in yourself, and it shouldn't be like that. You just, you know, what I say to people now is go out, do your best, and see where that takes you. And I suppose one thing that I would have said to myself and comfort myself in the days leading up to a big race would be, okay, I'm going to do my very best. And I knew that I was going to do my very best. I knew I was going to run myself to exhaustion. And once I did that, then I was content within myself. And, you know, I was always finding ways of, for that contentment, for that inner peace, not to be beating myself up. And, you know, a lot of sports people do beat themselves up when they don't perform or they don't get the result that they want. And, you know, it's just, that's why I keep saying, just enjoy it, do the best you can, leave no stone unturned, but at the same time, don't beat yourself up.
You were obviously extremely, extremely tough on yourself when you were running. I don't think that's too much of a jump to say from what you're saying. What would that internal monologue be like if you didn't win a race or you didn't perform like you expected to perform?
Yeah, look, I would I would be down in myself, but as I said to Eoghan, I would always know that I had given it 110%.
So there was some sort of solace there?
Yes, yeah, yeah. But still, you know, there was on a few occasions, needless to say, that, yeah, I was sad, I was disappointed that things didn't work out. A couple of times I got sick before big races and wasn't able to give in my full effort. But, you know, looking back on it, that's sport, and you're not going to be on the top of your game every time you go out, and you're going to have disappointments. And I suppose the key thing is to get back and just bounce back and get back into training again. And I would have always done that. You know, I would have, even though I would have had a bad race, I knew the next morning I was going to get up and run and run it out of my system.
Yeah, keeping going is obviously something that you very much had in spades. Like, is it a harsh question to ask, if you weren't so hard on yourself, you wouldn't have had the level of success that you had? Was it almost a prerequisite for the incredible level of success that you did achieve?
Yeah, but there's a balance there as well. I often overcooked it.
How so?
Overtraining.
Overtraining. So yes. The sickness was, for example, if you were sick the week of a race, mm-hmm. would that be a consequence of the overtraining, which was a consequence of being hard on yourself?
Yeah, well, a couple of times maybe. Maybe I didn't get sick that often, but I would have had a couple of times. A couple of times I overdid it and just the body just shut down and was too tired and exhausted. And again, that was just an inner drive. I just thought by doing more, it was going to be better, and didn't get the balance right. And I suppose that's the thing that I preach to people now as well, just sometimes less is more. But there was certainly times during my career whereby I exhausted out the body.
This feels like a ridiculous question to ask one of Ireland's greatest ever sports people, but this is just in your opinion. Do you feel you got the best out of yourself?
there's a long pause there, isn't there? certainly, if I was to do it again, I would have done things differently. Things are very different now as well, and it's way more scientific. And there's more people to talk to, you know, sports psychologists and that sort of thing. No. I suppose is the straight and honest answer.
Is there a regret there?
Not a regret. Right. No. Look, I'm very happy with what I achieved, and I don't like to blow my own trumpet at all. That's not the way we were reared. But you know, as a young girl, I never thought that I would be winning the London Marathon. We would have always watched it on a Sunday at home as a family, and I never thought that I would be crossing the line in first place in the London Marathon. And, you know, that probably will never be replicated again by an Irish person. So it's only maybe in recent years that I appreciate that. You know, you go through different stages of life and different things happen in life. And but now as I'm getting a little bit older, yeah, that's something that my children are happy with as well. I have to say that, and they're and I don't like to use the word proud, but you know, to their mother won the London Marathon, and that is something that's nice, and that I'm happy with.
Yeah, I don't think there's any person who would need to justify your success through the prism of a CV or anything like that. It is just so interesting to hear you talk about it like that, and the being tough in yourself nature is just a really, really interesting theme that so many of the greatest sports people have had. When it comes to then the point that we kind of touched on earlier on about athletics as something of a minority sport, mm-hmm. I might actually just ask you that as a fairly straight up question. First of all, like, do you think it is a minority sport? Because A, it's probably the most played sport in the world, everybody runs, but B, it probably doesn't have the same level of attention except for at major championships.
Yeah, look, it's we're always up against the GAA in this country, and it's not a nice word to use, but we probably lose a lot of good athletes through GAA, but that's people's choice as well, and that's what they want to do. They want to either play football or hurling, or GAA or hurling. And you have to be very, very individual. You have to be very, very different to be a sprinter or a middle distance runner, because of how individual it is. And there is a lot of good youngsters playing different sports, but they wouldn't have the mindset to be in an individual sport, so they're playing team sports. And that's the reason why we're possibly a minority sport and we're a small country as well. But I think for the size of the country, we have achieved a lot of great success in athletics and continue to do that, and particularly there in the last couple of years, you know, with all the sprinters and the relays and all of that. We've hit a new level as regards sprinting in athletics in Ireland. So there's a lot to look forward to. And there is a lot of interest, as you said, their own. Even though we don't have the mass participation at the elite level, there's mass participation, you know, and a lot of people running marathons, and I have groups, and there's a lot of different groups running. And at the elite level, you know, there it's tough because it's so individual, and you know, all they can do is their best and keep working away and not to fear their opposition. You know, I always believe that if you have that talent, leave no stone unturned, just keep working away at it and you will have your day. You know, there's no reason why we can't be, you know, if you have that talent and if you have that drive and if you have that work ethic, there's no reason why you can't be as good as anybody else in Europe or indeed in the world.
And having that drive, is that something that you needed to overcome certain obstacles? And again, I'm not sure, like, was there maybe questions with regards to facilities and outlets that were available to you as somebody who was participating in athletics?
Yes. I suppose being a middle distance athlete, I always believed, and I never used any excuses, I always believed that all you need is a little bit of space to run. And I started off, as I said, running around the fields, and then I moved to running around the football pitch at home. And, you know, try not to make excuses. It's very, very easy to make excuses. And I do, and maybe I'm talking out of character here, but excuses is, to me, a little bit a sign of weakness. So you do, you make with what you have and do, you know, do the best with what you have and work with what you have. And I did that, like just running around the fields, running around the golf course at home. And once you have a vision, once you want something badly enough, you will get it if you work hard enough for it.
Can you ask for things? Can you ask for help as an athlete whilst also accepting that no excuses culture?
Just explain that to me in our own.
What
do you mean?
You say make the best of what you have at your disposal, which makes a lot of sense. But were the things that were at your disposal always of a high class, whether it was coaches that were available to you, facilities that were available to you? Like, obviously, you say to yourself, you can't be blaming a poor workman blames his tools and all that sort of thing. But could you have had a better infrastructure around you as somebody who was competing in athletics, whilst also, as I say, maintaining that no excuses culture?
I think, to be honest, and personally, financially, I was always very secure.
Right.
You know, once I began to win even national titles, people in Cavan supported me. So financially, you know, I was never, there was no reason why I couldn't go off altitude training for a month in different places or warm weather training. So, you know, I was lucky in that respect. But I suppose I was good enough to be able to, for people to come on board to support me and to back me. And I do believe that there is some athletes, you know, struggling to a certain extent in that. And yeah, that shouldn't be the case. You know, if you have the talent and if you're willing to work hard, money shouldn't be something that's holding you back, that you should be supported so that you can go to these places and train and so that you can get the most out of yourself.
There's a couple of other things I wanted to ask you about. We've been talking, obviously, about the place of athletics in the national consciousness here in Ireland. As you've mentioned, you were born 2 days apart. from Sonny O'Sullivan. Did you welcome the idea that there was somebody who was sharing the spotlight with you, that you weren't the person? There was somebody else who was getting a lot of attention as well, and maybe that came with a little bit less pressure?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's well documented as well, Owen, that I always said that I was delighted that Sonia was around the same time as I was competing, because if there was only me, I'm sure Sonia would say the same, the pressure would have been overwhelming. Definitely we were lucky to have each other, to take the attention off each other to a certain extent.
And when it comes to the idea of, you know, trying to do it for other people as well, that spotlight and the validation from other people, do they sometimes go hand in hand, that you almost needed the spotlight, you needed to be the person so that other people would give you the respect that you almost thrived on? As in, so the attention that you would have shared with Sonia, was there ever a sense that the more attention that you were getting in a perverse way, the better, because it was something that fueled you? What other people were thinking of you, as you were saying earlier on, you weren't really doing it for yourself.
I didn't really like the attention, though, Owen.
Right.
I felt that very pressurising.
Yeah.
And I like the way Fionnuala operates. She can go and run a race and nobody knows that she's going to run it, and she doesn't do very many interviews, and I like that. And I try to do that to the best of my ability as well, and not in a bad way, but I just felt that, you know, that I could say something, like there was headlines on the paper, like before a race, like McKiernan in the form of her life, and you know, then if you go and do the race and you don't perform, then you feel like a little bit of a fool or whatever,
really?
You know. Yeah, and it was just pressurising, and that's why I would never have said much before a race, because you never know what's going to happen. And you know, even before the London Marathon, I often tell the story. There was a press conference on the Tuesday before, and I was asked, you know, how do you think it's going to go? And I had my one-liner: I'm going to do my best, the training has gone well, and we'll see what happens. And, you know, I was just protecting myself because I didn't want the pressure.
Right. Fair. That's totally understandable. And I guess you performed better as a result of not feeling that pressure?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yeah, and that's why, you know, to a certain extent, the athletes have it tough now, because there's so much attention there. There's, you know, with social media. So it is very pressurising. And as I said, they have to do a certain amount of it for sponsors and all of that, but it does add a pressure that they could do without.
It does feel that running as an activity that people put a lot of time into has come in from the fringes, if it was ever there in the first place, over the past number of years. It does feel the pandemic probably had a big impact on that. People are busier now, they live more individual lives. But I presume from your standpoint, you've noticed something of a boom in the sport?
Yeah, it's very different since the pandemic. There's so many more people running, so many more competitions. And I think one reason for that is because life is a little bit stressful, and people find running and they feel very good in themselves. And, you know, that's a driving force for them. Also, there's a lot more events on now as well. And even the park run has gotten a lot of people into running. It has given people an opportunity to experience and find out what running is really about and the feeling of well-being that they can get from it. And I think, you know, people are more health conscious now as well, and which are all very positives.
You're obviously involved in the space as well today.
Yeah, so I have some running groups, and again, these are people that want to just do it for themselves and for health, and it's a social aspect as well, and some of them go off to different places around the world and run half marathons, 10Ks, marathons, and yeah, it's very much social.
Is it Chai Running? Is that the organisation that...
Basically it's just my own groups that I have own. And we just, you know, I like to, I suppose, share my experience. And it's nice to see people starting from a very low level of fitness to being able to run a marathon. That's very, very satisfying, and seeing how they're progressing over the months.
When it comes to your own competitiveness when you're out running at the moment, do you still have that competitive bug?
Yeah, I'll bring that to my grave.
Yeah.
I always have that. So I don't do any races anymore because I don't, you know, obviously I don't train to be competitive. I just go for runs now just because it's something I've always done. It's something that makes me feel good in myself. But I don't even like to line up on a park run because...
So you'll hammer everybody else?
Well, no, it's not that. But I suppose I've always, when I would run a race or anything, like even park runs, I would always prepare for them. And now I don't. Now I just run, so I don't do any fast running. And I just wouldn't feel good in myself just going out. And I hope I don't sound a little bit cocky about this, but I just wouldn't feel good in myself just running around a park run or running around a 5K or a 10K. It's just in my nature to push it and give it 110%. And I don't want to do that anymore.
So do you manage to find other outlets where you can be the fully competitive version of yourself?
No, I have accepted that I can't be fully competitive
right.
anymore. Yeah. And that is difficult, and that took a long time.
Okay. Even when you go out and run a 5K, you wouldn't check the time afterwards and say, geez, that's my best one in a while or anything like that?
I don't, though.
Right.
No. I just like to... I suppose I have it in the back of my mind as well that I want to do this for a long time to come even. And I want to, I suppose, look good and feel good while I'm running. And I don't want to, I suppose, wear out the body. I have a lot of miles in the legs as it is. And I just want to stay as fresh as I possibly can from here on in.
And was that an easy transition?
No.
Right. How did you manage to get through that?
Time.
A long time?
Longer than I would have liked.
Right, because it is fascinating that obviously any average Joe would go out, start running, and maybe they ramp up towards competitiveness. Relatively speaking, you obviously ramped up to that very early in your life, and then having to go back the other way must be a very challenging transition.
Humbling. It did. And, you know, any sports person listening will understand that. And, it was a process.
Yeah. Any advice for any other sports people going through that process as to how you got through it?
Acceptance is the strongest word in the English dictionary.
Right.
With everything in life. And accepting and letting go and appreciating, I suppose, what I achieved and putting my energy into something different. And that's what I do with the groups. And I'm also learning to become a Pilates instructor. So, I always have new ideas and new visions. And, you know, I know being a Pilates instructor is something that I can do for a very long time to come as well. So, and I like to help people, and that's just in my nature. And I don't sit still for very long either, to be honest.
Yeah.
I always like to have something to do.
You've been sitting still here with us for over half an hour. Has this been a difficult process?
No, it hasn't. No. It has been enjoyable alone. Yeah. And look, I hope people listening learn from some of the things that I have said, that something resonates with them or something ticks with them, and that, you know, as you do get older, you begin to just appreciate life and appreciate, I suppose, health a lot more and not take things for granted.
Well, Katrina, it's always an absolute privilege to chat to an absolute legend of Irish sport. Thank you so much for making time for us today. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you, Owen.
Settle in on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 0.0.